Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The Trump administration is signaling it wants talks with Iran, but towards what end? Given the administration's track record, talks are a deception and a tactic for further escalation. To date, there is no indication the U.S. and Israel want peace with Iran. Crosstalking the war on Iran, I'm joined by my guest, Janine Younes, in Washington. She is the National Legal Director of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. In Istanbul, we have Sami Aran. He is the director of the Center for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zaim University. And in Malaysia, we cross to Julia Rockenfard. She is a senior lecturer at Taylor's University. All right, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Janine, the airwaves and the broadsheets, they're covered with headlines, what Trump might do, what he wants to do, what he could do. I find what's missing is that he's not in the driver's seat anymore. Iran is in the driver's seat. It's going to be what they want to do, and it's going to be on their timetable. Western media can't come to grips with that. Or I actually would say the Western world itself, with its kind of neocolonial mindset in looking at the region. Your thoughts, Janine?
Yeah, well, this administration drastically underestimated Iran's capabilities and thought that they could just go in and do whatever they want and get out whenever they wanted. And they are finding out quickly that that's not true. I mean, I think one of the things that's most shocking about this, there are a lot of things that are shocking about what happened, what the U.S. and Israel have done to Iran and started in Iran. But it's just completely shocking that they failed to do the bare minimum amount of research. They didn't have the bare minimum amount of knowledge that one would expect if you were to start a major offensive like this. It's beyond the pale, and that's not even to mention the horrific war crimes that they've already engaged in and the complete lack of respect they've shown for international law. They have just, if America had any clout left on the world stage, I think they've completely obliterated it. And we can no longer claim to be anything close to a moral leader in the world. I mean, I would argue that after the Gaza genocide, that was already the case. But to anyone who thought they had any credibility left, I think we're done. So, that's about my reaction.
Yeah, I would go a little bit further. I would say that maybe the difference is that you've seen the Gazification of American foreign policy, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Because, the first day of the war, the killing of 170 children, they still can't get their story straight on that. Sami, there are reports, Trump's talking about, he's talking to a new leadership, they're having good talks and all that. Nobody has any idea what he's talking about. And even if it were true, which it's not, there are reports that there are troops being sent to invade islands, make a landing on Iran. I mean, what are these troops going to do? What would their mission possibly be? Are they going to get take uranium out on an airplane and fly it out of Iran? I mean, do they have the capability of doing that? I mean, none of this makes any sense. I agree with Janine. I mean, pick whatever angle you want. You can't make sense of it. Go ahead, Sami.
Well, the problem with Trump is he's delusional. He's living in fantasy land. He has no strategy, no plan. He went into this. He was duped by Netanyahu, possibly even extorted. And he got there without knowing what he's getting himself into. And now he is in real trouble. He doesn't know what to do. So he talks from both sides of his mouth. He lies anytime he breathes. And I'm talking about one lie when he inhales and one lie when he exhales. And he's talking about something that has nothing in reality. Now, he wants to send ground troops. Keep in mind that when the United States wanted to kick Saddam out of Kuwait back in 1991, they had to assemble 700,000 troops.
That's right.
Half of them were Americans. And when they wanted to go and invade and dislodge Saddam Hussein, have a regime change in Iraq, they had to get over 200,000. Now, when you send a few thousands of the Marines or the 82nd Airborne, what's that going to do? It's going to be a turkey shoot for the Iranians. It will be very easy to pick them out. And I think that would be a colossal mistake, not just because he will not be able to extricate himself out of this dilemma, but he's going now to go deeper into this. I mean, it's like Vietnam 1965, where you're going to get deeper into this and nothing's going to happen except more trouble for the United States.
Julia, what we have right now is the messaging coming out of Tehran is that they're not interested in any talks with the United States, obviously not with Israel. Why should they? Why at this point? I mean, during the Afghan war, the Taliban famously said, you have the clocks, but we have the time. I think this applies with Iran. They have the time. Julia.
Yes, for Iran, it's obviously a geography. Iran is there to stay, as well as the Iranian neighbors who have been treading very cautiously throughout all this, trying not to get engaged in the conflict. For Iran, of course, and I would rather believe the Iran side of things, that probably President Trump is talking to himself, and we've seen a lot of memes illustrating this, rather than somebody in Tehran, in whichever regime Trump is imagining, the first, second, or third. He argues that that's the third one, which is more credible and more lenient towards striking any sort of the deal. I wouldn't believe that. I would say that in Tehran, the position and the appetite is definitely to continue with the strikes. Yes, maybe low intensity, but that's exactly why Tehran has got the time. It has got the time for this low intensity warfare, which will be forcing Trump's hand to stay, unless there will be some sort of arrangement with Israel, which when found itself desperate with the United States pulling out, then will finally decide that it's time to stop. But so far, it doesn't seem to be happening. And again, definitely no intention in Tehran to usher any sort of talks after the trust has been undermined in June last year, in 2025, and now with the start of this campaign, because both of the strikes and now the current war started during the some phase of negotiations, which, if I may remind you, this time these negotiations were described as highly successful, whatever that was. So,
yeah, I mean, Janine, I mean, you know, not only is, as you've already alluded to on this program, not only is this administration not trustworthy, they've proven themselves to be incredibly incompetent. And I would say, and when it all comes out, very greedy as well. Janine.
Absolutely. I mean, the beginning of the war, starting with strikes on the Iranian girls' school, is an encapsulation of the level of incompetence we're dealing with here. I don't know if it was intentional or negligent. I'm not sure if it really matters. I guess it speaks to different things about what's going on there, but either it was gross negligence or it was intentional, which is just horrifying and extremely scary. But the idea that people like Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, as he calls himself, like Trump, the highest members, ranking members of this administration, don't have the slightest clue what they're dealing with when they're dropping bombs on foreign countries is so frightening to me. They didn't seem to understand basic things like the closing of the Strait of Hormuz. You know, I remember a year ago I was speaking to my dad about this. He's very, very involved in Middle East politics, and I said the one thing that Trump scared me with that Kamala didn't as much was the potential for war with Iran. And my dad said, "Oh no, they won't do that because, you know, the Strait of Hormuz, they cannot risk having that closed." And I felt better for a little while. And it turns out they didn't even know that. Just basic things that a high schooler, or at least somebody with a
Janine, I remember back in 2003. All of the simulations about what a war would possibly be. And the first thing that happens is they close the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah.
I mean, but that was, and now that's going back 13 years right now. Sammy, you and I were talking before the program here about how to look at this in a historical context. And I said, you know, major dates like the end of the Second World War in 1945, the end of the Soviet Union in 1991, and now it's 2026, the changing of the entire political order in West Asia, or as the West calls it, the Middle East. Sammy.
Yeah, we are at an inflection point. I think we are at the cusp of a new world order. I think this is the fading days of the American empire. It may not happen overnight, but it's going to take probably a few months and perhaps a few years. But Trump is the cause. He accelerated the end of the American empire. I think by most accounts, most of the American bases in the Middle East have been devastated. I think they have evacuated at least 15 to 17 different military bases. I think all the regimes, all the monarchies in this region have lost confidence that the United States is capable of protecting them, of providing any kind of protection to them, which was the formula that was coined back in 1974, protection for petrodollar. And if the United States loses the petrodollar as well as the military bases, what's left of the American empire? Probably very little.
Well, I mean, Sammy, also, would you fully expect that the map of the of that region will change by the time this conflict ends, meaning the Gulf monarchies, will they be intact or will they have the same status as they once had? Because I've always looked at these so-called countries as just brands and that their brands have been completely tarnished, if not destroyed. Sammy.
I expect them to stay for the main reason that Iran will not go and occupy them. Iran is going to be the biggest country, the most powerful one in this region. And it does have a stake. It wants to keep them, but it wants to change their policies. The problem with the monarchies is that you don't really have populations who will go and overthrow the governments. Most of these monarchies, they have probably as much as perhaps Saudi Arabia, which is the largest, 30 plus million. Over half are Saudis. But when you look at the others, they really have very little, 20% of the population, yep, perhaps 10% of the population. That is not capable of doing a revolution. Now, if you have other outside powers, such as India, if it dares to go and try to stir trouble, then they were talking about different system, but I don't expect it to happen. So what I think is going to happen
What will happen is that they will ask Iran for protection. All right, on that note, gentlemen, yeah, and ladies, we're going to go to a break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the war on Iran. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle Schumann. We're discussing the war on Iran. Let's go back to Julia. One of the interesting things is that there's a comparison being made to the oil shock of 1973 and what's going on right now. And I think that those that make the comparison don't really know what they're talking about, because this is far, far, far worse. It was an interruption of supply in 1973. This is the obliteration of an entire sector in the Middle East right now. Destroying refineries will take billions and billions of dollars and possibly a decade to rebuild. Meanwhile, the world has to go on or it won't go on. Go ahead, Julia.
The world will have to go on under the new conditions. And the thing that we're facing right now, and people are trying to make predictions and forecasts of what's going to happen, what's the best course of action in that. But the thing is that it's quite unprecedented. We haven't had such a situation before. And this is why it's interesting to see how many self-proclaimed experts are claiming to know what needs to be done or what's going to happen there. The oil price is going up and probably will continue after this, the intermediate, I don't know how to call it, intermediate ceasefire, which never happened, that Trump has promised. But the more terrifying thing is, and how Janine said that we haven't, of course, expected the Strait of Hormuz by any rational consideration, the Strait of Hormuz being closed as a result of the U.S. Finally attacking Iran. I've done my PhD on Iran, and there were multiple calculations of how rationally it's not possible. It's against all the possible reasoning that the United States should not start the war in Iran because of this and that, because it will require the ground operation that we are all talking about. But the terrifying thing is that if we think about the longer shot at the why this is happening, you might think that, well, maybe it's an attempt to restructure the whole of West Asia, which is the Middle East, and somehow maybe even deny the global South as a whole the means of development. Because as Donald Trump claims that America is self-sufficient in terms of energy, and it tries to impose quite stringent conditions on the allies on supplying energy in the first place, but it also is going to affect many other things. But what's going to happen with the Middle East and the countries that it supplies with energy, China included, but not the only one, I would say the global South as a whole, that's the perspective that we are facing as a result of all of that. And maybe there was some long shot plan in Trump's head, which maybe not going very well, but it's heading to a major disruption, and the Middle East is not going to be what it was.
Yeah, I think it's called Venezuela, okay? I think he's got Venezuela on the brain, okay? We're supposed to be a walk in the park, weekend warriors. It would all be filmed, and Donald Trump would be the star. Janine, you know, one of the things that's really fascinating to me is that, you know, I was the last year of high school when the revolution occurred in Iran. And ever since then, it's the crazy mullahs and the religious fanatics. And it goes on and on and on, and Hollywood does it. But you know, Janine, it's just the opposite. It's religious fanatics and fanaticism that is ruling many people in West, the powers of in the West right now. And you know, Mike Huckabee, that interview, what a train wreck that was. But at least he was truthful and maybe very revealing about how people think about the situation in the region around Trump. You know, it's flipped. The fanatics are not in Tehran.
I was just about to say that we would be remiss not to mention the influence of Benjamin Netanyahu and his psychotic regime on this war. I mean, I think they're probably ultimately responsible for why we're doing this. They desperately want to destroy Iran so that they're the only power, the only real superpower in the region, if you can call it that, or functional power. This is their dream, is to shatter Iran and then to be able to have hegemony over the region, to create just a bunch of dysfunctional states and to expand their territory, as we're seeing that they're doing in southern Lebanon, and they would love to do even more. And as I've said many times, it's ironic that so many neocons and others in the West blame radical Islam for the world's ills and say it poses the greatest threat, when it's actually Christian Zionism and radical Judaism that are really putting us in a very, very grave situation, possibly a risk of nuclear war and even something worse, such as nuclear apocalypse. I mean, if you listen to these people talk, like Pete Hegseth, Mike Huckabee, it is really scary. I actually had a conversation with Carrie Bowler, who was in the news recently for confronting the Religious Liberty Commission under Trump about their commitment to Israel. And she was saying she had been in the dispensationalist church. And they say things like they want the Palestinians to be killed and driven out of Gaza and the West Bank, because then the Jews can take it over and that will usher in the second coming. They want violence and death. And it is so scary, and it's so ironic how they have framed it as the Muslims who pose this existential threat to humanity, when it's the other two major, you know, these extremists. Of course, I would never say mainstream Christianity or Judaism, but the extremists in these other two religions that pose the existential threat.
You know, but Janine, when I hear that, I always retort, and they don't like when I say it. I said, but if it's prophecy and it's going to happen, why do you have to force it? It's just going to happen. Just wait. Why should you play a role in it? It's going to happen anyway. This is the kind of fanaticism you can't deal with here. Sammy, what kind of region are we going to see after this? Because I think, you know, because of the demonization and the mystification of Iran in the Western world for so many decades, 47 years, that's what everybody says, you know, but Iran is going to return. It's reemerging as a power in the region like it has for a millennia.
Indeed. I mean, Iran is looking at this as an existential threat. In the past, they put all kinds of pressures on Iran, whether it was economic sanctions, dual containment, whether it was imposing a war like the Iran-Iraq war, helping Saddam invade Iran for 8 years of war, all kinds of things that they were imposed in Iran. And then even last year, it did not seek a war. So it even warned the United States that some missiles are coming, just to show that it has the capability. But once this war was waged and they decapitated the leadership, Iran has no choice but to fight back with everything it's got. And what we have today is Iran has the upper hand, and it's not going to back down. It's going to force the United States actually to accept either a defeat or some sort of concessions that will propel Iran to become a major power. It might even put certain rules of who gets in and who gets out from the Strait of Hormuz, what kind of American power will exist in the region, including military bases, and so on and so forth. And indeed, the more this war drags on, it's to the advantage of Iran rather than the United States. I think Trump is in real trouble. The United States is in real trouble. They don't know how to extricate themselves out of this. And the more this goes on, the United States and Israel will be on the defensive. They will be in trouble rather than Iran.
You know, Julia, one of the problems that the world faces because of the behavior of the Trump administration and its ally, Israel, of course, here, is that they don't know how to negotiate in good faith. They don't know what diplomacy is really all about. During the Napoleonic Wars, the France lost, okay? They lost. And what kind of order did they create after? Well, you invite them and sit down at the table and treat them with respect and hash out the new future. That's how a lot of conflicts in history have ended, you know? You got to sit down and you got to hash it out. The United States is incapable of doing it. It can't even think along those lines. That's what makes this a very tragic and dangerous situation, because unfortunately, I believe that nuclear weapons will be used before this conflict is over, but I don't think it'll be determinative. And that's scary in itself, because then it will normalize the use of those weapons. So because of the inability, the lack of imagination, the situation is even worse.
Some of the colleagues recently brought it to my attention is that, you know, we so often talk about Thucydides' trap in international relations, but in fact, what we are facing now is rather Kindleberger's trap, and that is the agony of the withering hegemon, and then inability or the lack of desire of the rising hegemon, which is China, to step in. That's why this is the chaos that we are observing. Of course, we all understand that there is inability and the total absence of desire on the part of the United States on the part of Trump administration in particular, to negotiate. And all the negotiations even were probably a preparation to this military operation, trying to buy time and crush Iran quickly. That didn't work out. So the question to the global South, again, from my side, and I think many people who are observing that, would be when this moment comes that with all the effects that we are now experiencing, especially economically, which also could cause social unrest in respective countries, when this moment will come where there will be consensus on the part of these countries affected to tell Trump to stop, to tell Israel, we know it's impossible to do that, and there are many reasons to that, not just vilification of Iran itself, but the perception of threat within Israel itself, where Iran is seen as the major culprit, and provided that Iran is not there, the region is going to be easier to control and subdue. But with Trump, there should be leverage, there should be a possibility to tell him to stop. And I think there will be more and more motivating factors for him, not only with the cost of price, the cost of oil rising, but also with the munitions, especially offensive munitions on the side of the United States running out.
Janine, we got 40 seconds left. How is this playing out domestically? You're the one in the States right now.
Well, people are worried, but I will say I don't want to say I'm not worried, but my view, this is very, very small minority as an American, but my view is it's okay if we live in a multipolar world and the U.S. isn't a superpower. I think we've abused our power. I think we've proven over the last 70 years that we actually don't have the moral authority to hold this position, and it's better if there are checks and balances. So I'm fine if this results in us having to be sort of better neighbors, better partners on the global stage.
I think eventually the people will come around, because it'll be in their self-interest at the end of the day. Fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Istanbul, and in Malaysia. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.